It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, legislators make a move toward further regulating Mainers' ability to opt their kids out of vaccinations, but it doesn't go as far as it could have. And Governor Paul LePage's plan to recognize the Department of Agriculture, or rather reorganize the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry runs into trouble. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Main News. Soon to mark his 100th birthday, former bank chairman David Rockefeller addressed an assembly of family and friends today to announce his birthday gift to the Acadia region, 1,000 acres of land, streams, and trails in Seal Harbor.
I realize that Seal Harbor, maybe more than any other location that I can think of in the world, has been important to me since I first came here when I was 3 months old in my parents' hands.
Rockefeller, who is grandson of oil tycoon John Rockefeller Sr., will transfer the acreage into the care of the Mount Desert Island and Garden Preserve for public use. The land, which is adjacent to Acadia National Park, has always been open to the public, and use will not change, says David McDonald, who sits on the preserve's board.
I have great confidence that the preserve and the park will work cooperatively on the trails, the streams, the natural communities that cross boundaries between this land and the park, which is all around us and which is really the essence of the conservation work here on the island.
The gift continues a legacy of land stewardship begun by Rockefeller's father, John D. Jr., who was largely responsible for donating the lands that became Acadia National Park. The transfer will officially take place this summer. State forestry officials say this year's infestation of the noxious invasive insect known as the brown-tail moth caterpillar is going to be worse this year than last.
They feed on the leaves of the trees, but the bigger problem for people is that they cause a nasty rash like poison ivy.
Maine Forest Service entomologist Charlene Donahue says the hairs of this caterpillar can break off and circulate in the air and may cause not only a rash but also respiratory distress. Donahue says this year evidence of the caterpillar has been found from Waterville to Cape Elizabeth and Auburn to Whitefield, with the highest concentrations in the Bodenham, Topsom, Bath, Harpswell, and Freeport areas. She says while people in brown-tail areas should take extra precautions during the late spring and summer, the chemical can stay active in the hairs for years. In weather tonight, cloudy in the northern mountains with a few rain and snow showers, partially clear in central Maine and clear in the south. Breezy tonight with lows in the high 20s to high 30s north to south. And tomorrow becoming partly sunny to partly cloudy after some morning showers or flurries in the north. In the south, mostly sunny, windy statewide with highs in the low 50s to low 60s. 25 minutes before 6. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Public health and school officials concerned about the numbers of Maine parents who were choosing not to have their children vaccinated on philosophical grounds made some headway today in the Health and Human Services Committee. In a 9-3 vote, the panel approved a bill requiring parents to consult with a doctor who would have to sign off on any vaccination opt-out request. A.J. Higgins has more.
Although Democratic Representative Peter Stuckey of Portland wound up voting for the bill that requires a doctor's consultation and written authorization before a parent can pull their child out of a vaccination program on philosophical grounds, he admitted to having mixed emotions. He says there's not enough conversation between medical providers and patients, and he says notification about the benefits and risks of some vaccinations is beneficial to all parties. But he says the national drug industry, that he refers to as Big Pharma, still has a lot to answer for.
You know, I watch TV. I watch those ads.
Stuckey reminded his seatmates on the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee of the daily bombardment of television ads promising Americans the benefits of new prescription drugs, along with more than a few cautionary notes.
In the first 5 seconds of the ad tells you what the miracle that the drug can do, and the next 45 seconds is all the possible side effects, including diarrhea, diphtheria, and death in some circumstances. So, I mean, these are the same folks that are bringing us the vaccine.
Skepticism over the benefits of some vaccines was a common theme from many Mainers who packed the legislative hearing room earlier this month for a hearing on the bill. Many parents say they should have the ability to opt out of the vaccinations as a matter of personal choice, a position shared by the committee's co-chair, Senator Eric Brakey, an Auburn Republican.
A repeated refrain we heard in the public testimony on this, and that really resonated with me and stuck with me, is this idea that when there's risk, there must be choice. I think this begins to encroach on that area of choice.
The vaccines that we're talking about here that we require of children before they go to school are for infectious diseases like polio and measles and whooping cough.
Democratic Representative Drew Katine, the Westbrook co-chair of the panel, said the committee vote on the bill strikes a balance between public health standards and parental rights, since currently parents can opt out of vaccinations without receiving the benefit of a physician consultation.
This seems to be very reasonable policy, both from a healthcare perspective and from an educational policy perspective, to make sure that when kids go off to public schools, that they're safe, and that other children and people that work there are protected also.
Lawmakers on the committee killed a bill that would have eliminated the parental opt-out provision on philosophical grounds and approved an amended version of a measure requiring the Department of Health and Human Services to assist Mainers who feel they are entitled to damages after suffering adverse reactions to vaccines. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
A plan by Governor Paul LePage to reorganize the recently created Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry has run into bipartisan opposition among lawmakers. As Mel Leary reports, members of the Appropriations Committee unanimously rejected most of the proposal, including the most controversial part.
Hundreds of lines in the proposed two-year state budget are devoted to the reorganization proposal. But what drew most concern by lawmakers was moving the Bureau of Public Lands under the umbrella of the Maine Forest Service. Turner Republican Jeff Timberlake serves on Appropriations, but has served previously on the Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Committee.
Public lands was designed to be part of parks, and it's just what it says it is. It's, even though forest land is public land tends to be where there's some hiking trails and stuff, so I think cutting should be done in a more selective and much more finite manner.
Representative John Martin, a Democrat from Eagle Lake, worked with Timberlake and members of the ACF committee on the proposal. He helped create the Bureau of Public Lands years ago in the aftermath of a landmark state Supreme Court decision on public land ownership.
We won the ownership to 136 of every township in the unorganized territory and plantations, and so there's been a long history of what was intended at the time and also what we intended for the future.
ACF Commissioner Walt Whitcomb is not surprised by the committee's action. He once served as the House Republican leader, but he wishes lawmakers had spent more time considering the proposal. Whitcomb says the agency spent considerable time and effort on a plan to make the department more efficient.
There were a lot of initiatives, and in one sense, I don't think that people spent a lot of time addressing them on their merits. You know, some interest groups got very heavily involved, some folks that are very protectionist.
He says as far as he knows, none of the language adopted by the committee will limit his administrative ability to streamline bureaus in the department. He was a bit surprised that lawmakers agreed to go along with a plan to arm rangers. Last year, it was the subject of legislation and lengthy debate by lawmakers.
If anybody that works with us is to have a weapon, that they be without question fully trained, and I think at least the Appropriations Committee is agreeing with us on that.
Martin says the new language gives the commissioner the discretion to arm rangers, as well as how many rangers to arm. It also provides funding for weapons and bulletproof vests for rangers. Timberlake says the panel wants to make sure any ranger that does carry a firearm meets the basic qualifications required of all other law enforcement officers.
You want them at the same training level. And we felt it very important that they have the same psychiatric evaluation, everything the same, so when they get to the scene, it's all treated. Everybody knows what the other man's doing.
While the vote of the Appropriations Committee was preliminary and could be reconsidered, Whitcomb says he believes it will stand, and he says he can live with it. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
50 years ago on Monday, the city of Lewiston was in the international sporting spotlight. That was when world heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali came to Maine to defend his crown for the first time against Sonny Liston. It was a short match, with Liston knocked out in the first round. But as Tom Porter reports, what the fight lacked in substance, it made up for in drama, both inside and outside the ring.
On May 25, 1965, Muhammad Ali fought Sonny Liston at the Central Maine Youth Center in Lewiston. It wasn't the best title fight on record. It was over before the end of round one. But filmmaker Gary Robinoff of Portland agrees it was probably the strangest.
It was the smallest attended World Heavyweight Championship fight in the smallest town in history, still. I mean, it was just such a bizarre thing.
Robinoff, whose documentary Raising Ali examines the fight and the impact it had on the city of Lewiston, says nearly everything about the match was unusual. It was originally scheduled to take place in Boston until the Massachusetts Attorney General banned it for a number of reasons, including concern that it could be the flashpoint for a civil rights disturbance.
The Vietnam War was going on. 2 months prior, they had just marched in Selma. There was a lot of stuff going on in this country. So, you know, you add the speculation that Liston also had mob ties. The state attorney general in Massachusetts basically said, we don't want it here. We just don't think it's going to be a fair fight. We don't think it's a safe fight.
Less than 3 weeks to go before the opening bell, and here was a world title fight without a venue. Enter Sam Michaels, Lewiston native and well-connected boxing promoter who decided the best option was to bring the show to his hometown.
Sam was the type of guy that could do that real quickly.
Lewiston attorney Larry Raymond was among those who helped Sam Michael bring the fight to Lewiston. Sonny Liston, a.k.a. The Bear, established his pre-fight training camp at Maine's Poland Spring Resort, where members of the press and other observers were impressed by his size and strength.
I met him a couple times, shook his hand. He had a hand that was bigger than twice of mine, but he didn't talk much at all.
For those 2.5 weeks before the fight, the circus came to Lewiston, says Gary Robinoff.
The press starts arriving. There was more press in Lewiston, Maine. There were approximately 600 reporters, which is more reporters than covered World War II.
Then came the night of the fight itself.
The World Heavyweight Boxing Championship. Proudly presented by...
The 2,500-seat stadium, normally home to a hockey rink, was overflowing. This was Ali's first fight under his adopted Muslim name, a fact that escaped some of the commentators.
The champion defending his heavyweight crown tonight, Cassius Clay.
As the fighters were introduced, it was clear that Liston was the favorite, while Ali, a controversial figure viewed with suspicion by mainstream America at the time, was booed by many in the crowd.
We're waiting for that bell for round one. Here we go.
Ali stepped back, as he typically did. He kind of drew you in, and then he'd drop a right-hand counterpunch on you.
That's Portland-based boxing coach and promoter Bob Russo. On that night, he was a 9-year-old boxing fan with a prized ringside seat, thanks to his Uncle George, who was head of the Maine Boxing Commission. It was a brief and disappointing fight, he says, but he recalls every moment of it.
Liston was kind of coming in, trying to desperately kind of cut the ring down on him, which is always a problem with someone like Ali. So you get a little bit desperate and you start to reach for him and stuff like that. And he was kind of leaning forward, and Ali clipped him with the right hand and he went down on all fours.
A right hand shot on the chin.
That was Ali's now infamous phantom punch, which came less than 2 minutes into round one. It's visible in slow motion replays, but few can recall seeing it at the time. In fact, many who were there seemed to miss the fight altogether, among them Larry Raymond.
As the bell rang for the first round, I turned around and put my wife's stole on the back of her chair. And when I looked back, Liston was on the canvas.
The fight started and it was, for all practical purposes, over almost before we sat down.
13-year-old Paul Gosselin was there with his father, returning to their seats from the concession stand when the fight began.
My dad over the years kidded me by saying, we didn't miss much, Paul. No one else saw the punch.
The end of the fight is perhaps the strangest part of the story, says Gary Robinoff. Many forget this, he says, but Liston actually got back on his feet after being put down.
They re-engaged. So at 1:44, the punch happened, and somewhere around a minute 56... they're back up and fighting.
Shortly afterward, referee Jersey Joe Wolcott stopped the fight and declared Ali the winner. But that was only after the intervention of someone who was not even an official.
If you really want to know who, I guess, officially stopped that fight, it was the editor of Ring Magazine, who said, no, this fight's over.
He's talking about boxing journalist Nat Fleischer, who pulled the referee aside and pointed out that Liston had been on the canvas for 12 seconds and should not be allowed to continue. Bedlam ensued. People were angry. But for the youngsters in the crowd, like 9-year-old Bobby Russo, who has always been a fan of Ali, the evening was a chance to witness the birth of an American legend.
He was an iconic person in history more than boxing. He was much bigger than boxing.
For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
The documentary Raising Ali will be shown at 9 on MPBN television. That's 9 p.m. on Monday, May 25th, and that's this coming Monday. There's also a special screening that night at the Andras Goggin Bank Coliseum, the site of the original fight in 1965. And you can hear more from filmmaker Gary Robinoff and from boxing coach Bob Russo at news.mpbn.net. Now at 12 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
This shall be a memorably chilly start to the long holiday weekend. In the wake of the cold front, clouds will cling to the county in the mountains, producing a few more showers and even a few flurries, while skies gradually clear throughout the rest of Maine. Upper 20s in the mountain valleys by dawn to the upper 30s along the seacoast. Quite windy and cool tomorrow. Over northern western Maine, morning showers and flurries will dry up, becoming partly sunny. It will be partly to mostly sunny for much of the state. Low 50s to low 60s north to south. Sunday, still breezy, with an isolated morning shower over the county and the mountains. Look for a mix of sun and clouds for much of the state. Warmer, low 60s to upper 70s north to south. It will be a quiet Memorial Day, clouds slowly amassing. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Susan Sharon, and Barbara Caridi. I'm Nora Flaherty.